They would have him out on the White House lawn, drawn, quartered, and being eaten alive by red ants right now.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
What you have is a White House press corps that is absolutely cowed. We have now gone from news to infotainment, and because it's now an entertainment industry, if covering a missing white girl in Aruba is going to make more profit than talking about body armor, then they're all for it.
Tom Hartman on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Dave Barrett. Did Vice President Dick Cheney encourage the leaking of secret information to bolster the Bush administration's Iraq invasion? That claim is made on the website of the National Journal. Reportedly, the Vice President's former chief of staff, Scooter Libby, testified about this to a federal grand jury. At the White House,
we're not going to discuss this while it's an ongoing legal proceeding, and that remains our policy.
Spokesman Scott McClellan, some big picture perspective from CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen.
If these allegations by his former assistant are true, it certainly won't help the vice president. It's an open question about whether this hurts Dick Cheney legally. Only the special prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, knows the answer to that question.
Captured American journalist Jill Carroll has been seen on another video. She was taken in Iraq a month ago. The tape was shown on Kuwaiti TV today, and it may have been made 3 days ago.
I'm here, I'm fine. Please just do whatever they want. Give them whatever they want as quickly as possible. There is very short time. Please do it fast.
CBS News reporter Christian Gillespie is in Amman. She's a friend of Jill Carroll and has seen this tape.
She's the most calm that
she said it would make most of the FBI's new Patriot powers permanent and extend the most controversial ones for 4 more years. Bob Buzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Treating attention deficit hyperactivity disorder means medication for many. CBS's John Harchie says that could soon come with a stronger warning.
A panel of expert advisors in a narrow 8-7 vote recommended that the FDA require a black box safety warning on ADHD drugs. This recommendation for the strongest, most obvious warning on drugs follows reports that suggest these drugs may be linked to 25 deaths, 19 involved children. Doctors now prescribe these increasingly popular drugs to about 2 million children and 1 million adults every month.
Though overall drug use in this age group is declining, teenage girls are experimenting more than boys with marijuana, cigarettes, and alcohol, according to the White House drug czar. Wall Street this Thursday, the Dow was up nearly 25, the NASDAQ lost 11. This is CBS News.
Hey, I'm Tom, and today's my ninth day with Prilosec OTC. Because of frequent heartburn, I couldn't even enjoy my kids' games. But with Prilosec OTC, that's all changed. Now, when my daughter's soccer team takes on the Wolverines, I'm there yelling. She really hates that. Imagine, zero heartburn for 24 hours with one pill a day. It's possible with Prilosec OTC. It's day 9 for me. What day are you on?
Use as directed for 14 days for treating frequent heartburn.
Want to be a big hit this Valentine's? You need to know 1-800-Flowers.com. They have the ultimate Valentine's gifts, and the flowers always get rave reviews. Tulips, roses, orchids, they're all gorgeous. And 1-800-Flowers.com delivers their flowers at the peak of perfection, even same day. And you can add chocolates or a teddy bear to any bouquet to make the perfect gift even more perfect. Just call or log on to 1-800-Flowers.com today and mention Lisa. You'll save 10% on anything you order. Go to 1-800-Flowers.com/radio for details.
A memory molecule in your brain may be what leads some people to depression. Deleting it can change a mood. CBS's Lou Miliano explains.
In Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Jim Carrey embarked on getting rid of memories that depressed him.
For any risk of brain damage. Technically, the procedure is brain damage.
But instead of erasing troubling memories, Texas researchers have found a gene in the brain of mice that makes memories troubling.
It's probably dealing with analyzed some social information.
Dr. Oliver Burton at the University of Texas Southwest Medical Center says their findings may one day lead to the human treatment of social phobias and post-traumatic stress. Lou Miliano, CBS News.
There are guidelines to work with, but the federal government is closer to issuing space tourism licenses. Next year, permits may be doled out and test flights may follow. Transportation Secretary Norman Mineta says paying customers may be launched from sites in the U.S. by 2008. I'm Dave Barrett, CBS News.
If you enjoy helping people and want to turn that passion into a career, you can. Right now, the Home Depot has full and part-time employment opportunities for sales, cashier, lot, department supervisor, and other positions. We're an equal opportunity employer with excellent benefits, tuition reimbursement, and thorough training. If this sounds like the perfect fit for you, apply at careers.homedepot.com or at your nearest Home Depot store. We'd love for you to be a part of our team, the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help.
At CompUSA, we get how to make the best technology even better, which is why this Saturday until 2 p.m., you can get the latest technology at just 7% over cost. Desktops and notebooks, including Apple's, digital cameras, camcorders, printers, PDAs, and home electronics, all at amazingly low prices. But it's only until 2 p.m., so get yourself to CompUSA this Saturday and save big. CompUSA, we got it, we get it. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. I am your humble host, Peter B. And I'm reveling in the afterglow of last night's Grammy Awards show, which kicked off with this song, which is my absolute favorite tune from 2005. The group is called Gorillaz, and they appear to be largely an animated figment of somebody's imagination. I first heard this song while I was on vacation in Italy last summer and just could not get it out of my noggin. And imagine my surprise when they led off the Grammys and then segued into a dance number featuring Madonna, who appears to be 22 years younger than she was the last time I saw her on the Grammys. And the big hype and big letdown last night, the return from semi-retirement of Sly Stone. What a waste of time. Now, maybe Sly has impairments I just don't know about, but he was barely conscious as he stood there wearing some sort of a Mohawk fright wig and a gold lame cape outfit. And they had his microphone mixed down so low that whatever was coming out of his mouth was not audible to those of us watching on television. And I was one of the biggest Sylvester Stewart, Sly Stone fans when he was a big act in the late 60s, early 70s. And it's one of those cases where it would have been better off to stay in retirement and leave the legacy untainted. Well, let's get down to business. We got 3 hours of live chat to bring you this afternoon. Lots of interesting information, some great guests coming up in about a half an hour. Jason Leopold, who is an investigative reporter for truthout.org, and his work appears at rawstory.com. He is scheduled today just in time because he's the one responsible for breaking the story about Dick Cheney's connection to the Wilson plane. You know what I'm talking about, Joe Wilson, and the way he was outed in retaliation for telling the truth about the phony lies about yellow cake from Niger. Jason Leopold from 3:30 to 4. Next hour, we're going to get an update and some perspective on the Muslim cartoon riots. Kaveh Hassani, who is a co-editor of the Middle East Report, will join us at 4 o'clock. And then Tom Bissell, who is a contributing editor to Harper's Magazine, we'll talk about his lengthy piece in the January edition of Harper's entitled Improvised, Explosive, and Divisive, Searching in Vain for a Strategy in Iraq. And Tom Bissell writes very grippingly about the threats to our soldiers from IEDs and the lack of a real strategy in Iraq. And we'll also talk to Kaveh Hassani about the situation in Iran, which, of course, is one that is front and center these days. In the 5 o'clock hour, it's all your phone calls, the Free Speech Zone, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And every week, Faz Shakir drops in for a visit. He's co-editor of the Daily Progress Report, published by the Center for American Progress in Washington. You can log on to progressreport.org and get your very own copy in your email box every day. That's how I do it. Faz, how are you today?
Hello, Peter. Good to be on with you again. I'm doing pretty well.
You have any mini reviews of the Grammys, or should we get right down to business?
You know, I'm afraid to say that I didn't get to see the Grammys, so I was interested in hearing your breakdown because I thought it sounded like a good show that I missed there.
Well, I give them a lot of credit. There was more music and less of the awards falderal, And that's what I like. Bruce Springsteen put on a great performance. Paul McCartney, if you still like him, did okay. But the sad news is that American Idol beat the Grammys in the ratings by more than 10 million viewers.
Yeah, I saw that. Isn't that amazing? I think that it shows how, it reflects on journalism as well. When you cater to the American masses, then and you dictate your coverage based on that, you're not going to get the highest quality coverage, I think.
And, you know, Kelly Clarkson is one of the graduates. Paul McCartney, if you still like him, did okay. But the sad news is that American Idol beat the Grammys in the ratings by more than 10 million viewers.
Yeah, I saw that. Isn't that amazing? I think that it shows how, it reflects on journalism as well. When you cater to the American masses, then and you dictate your coverage based on that, you're not going to get the highest quality coverage, I think.
And, you know, Kelly Clarkson is one of the graduates of American Idol, and I give her credit. I was one of those people skeptical and didn't, you know, just kind of wrote her off. But it was weird for her to win a Grammy last night and beat... I was one of those people skeptical and didn't, you know, just kind of wrote her off. But it was weird for her to win a Grammy last night and be there with all these professionals saying, hey, where the hell did she come from, and how did she sell 3 million units of that last CD?
Well, I guess it's about our evolving norms of what we deem to be quality nowadays. You know, it's almost like the blogs nowadays as well, where journalism has morphed into blogs themselves, and so more of the, you would say, the common masses are getting an opportunity to elevate themselves into the elite levels. And I guess Kelly Clarkson is one example.
Yeah. Now, I'm just writing down the two buzzwords that you just contributed to our vocabulary.
Scandal, he sold his vote for gifts from
CBS two nights ago. And yesterday, despite Cheney's protestations that briefing the entire House and Senate Intelligence Committees was...
A company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show live up and down the left coast. En vivo on KRXA 540, serving Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Live on KGOE 1480, serving Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County. Investigative reporter Jason Leopold will join us right after 3:30 here on the PBC Show. We continue now with Faz Shakir, co-editor of the Daily Progress Report. And in today's Progress Report, something that we first teased yesterday, Faz, you have some fascinating information, and Raw Story broke it, and we talked a little bit about it yesterday, but about photographs of Jack Abramoff with George W. Bush. And the president has his Ken Lay amnesia acting up on him. When Republican heavyweights and donors get into trouble, Bush says he never met him, can't remember him. And it appears that Abramoff is inserting or kind of reaching out to media organizations like Washingtonian Magazine and making sure that people know there are pictures of him with Bush and stories of their relationship over the years. What do you make of this? Given that he's already pled guilty, does he think this is going to help reduce his sentence, or is he just trying to make sure that he doesn't get locked out by the people who used to be his friends? Faz, do we have you?
Can you hear me?
Oh, now I can. Go right ahead.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah,
yeah, one point of clarification on that is that we obtained these emails, but we didn't obtain the pictures. We know that the pictures existed, and so we talked to the Washingtonian, their editor, Ken Eisler, over there, and we're wondering about what's going on, what's the relationship between Abramoff and Bush. And he shared with us a couple of emails that we put on our website at thinkprogress.org, in which Abramoff explicitly states that he and Bush met at least a dozen times, and that he is surprised that Bush would now say that they never met, because he has one of the greatest memories of any politician that Abramoff has ever met, and that their kids, that President Bush knew details about his kids and his family as well, and he was just surprised that the president would try to distance himself. And today, Scott McClellan was asked about the emails that we posted in the White House press briefing, and he didn't even address the issue. He just walked away from it completely, saying that he stands by what the president has said. And now some media organizations are starting to pick it up, and I think that this is a pretty significant story because it reveals that the administration is trying to hide what seems to be a very intimate and cozy relationship between the president and Jack Abramoff.
And I take your point of clarification that you did not publish or post the photos themselves, but just information that suggests or affirms that they do exist. And why is this so difficult? I mean, if Abramoff has the pictures, if Washingtonian has the pictures, why aren't they in general circulation? Is the White House succeeding in stonewalling these photographs?
Yes, I think that's exactly the truth. In fact, when we talked to the Washingtonian editor, Mr. Eisler, he said that that the administration claims that they're working diligently and trying to get to the bottom of this matter to find these photographs and reveal them to the public. But in fact, he says that Jack's got them sitting right there in his office. You can go right up into his home office and find six photographs that exist between President Bush and Jack Abramoff, his children. In fact, there's another picture of Laura Bush and Jack Abramoff's wife. And all these photographs are right there. So he said he was trying to make the point that if the White House were actually being sincere in its pledge to get to the bottom of this and make a thorough report of its dealings with Jack Abramoff, that these photographs would be front and center before the American public. But I think that the obviously the administration is not doing what it can and should be doing to become clean about this.
And is Abramoff attempting something on the order of blackmail, where he is trying to control the record here and make sure that nobody wiggles out of his grip?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and that was one of the interesting questions we had for Mr. Eisler as well, was whether Abramoff was shopping these photos around. What's he trying to do? And Mr. Eisler, who is admittedly a good friend of Jack Abramoff, they have a cozy relationship because Mr. Abramoff helped him writing a book previously 5 years ago in which Eisler wrote about Native American tribes. So he said that Jack Abramoff is not shopping these photos around. He claims that these photographs are sitting right there in his home office and that journalists have just come there and looked at these and reported on it from their own perspective after viewing them in Jack Abramoff's house. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, there have been reports that Jack Abramoff also went out to other media organizations and tried to show this to them and that they didn't bite on it. So I'm not sure who's telling us the real story, but we're getting both sides.
Yeah, very interesting. Faz, I want to turn to one more thing. I don't imagine that you've read every page of the budget proposal released by the White House on Monday, but each day we hear new surprises from what's contained in this $2.77 trillion proposal. Many of them quite negative. A proposed end to the Social Security death benefit, $255 that veterans and others use often to pay for funeral expenses or those end-of-life hospital bills. We've also heard that they're proposing an end to the benefit for the orphans of Social Security beneficiaries who are age 16 to 18 and for whatever reason drop out of school. Not sure what the social engineering plan there is, but it seems like a heartless budget cut. And when you counter those with the plans to extend the tax cuts for the wealthy well beyond any reasonable period of time where we could accurately project revenues, this is a very phony budget package. The other thing that's in there that we've heard about is a budget for the Social Security reform that was proposed by the president last year and never took any legislative form and was rebuffed by the Democrats and appears to be stalled. Is this Bush not taking no for an answer?
Well, he's trying to sneak it in, and I think that Congress, having already said that they're not interested in this proposal, will probably shoo it away. It's a little bit of fancy budget gimmicking where they try to move around numbers so that they can put out a budget number that looks like it's decreasing the deficit. But, of course, they weren't even able to do that. The deficit is projected to increase to $423 billion. I think what was most interesting about the budget is how blatantly hypocritical it was when you compare it to Bush's State of the Union just a couple days before. You know, Bush goes out there and says, we're committed to health care, we want to reform the system, and then he says we're going to cut $36 billion from Medicare. And then he says, well, we got to be a competitive nation. We got to make sure we're developing our new generation of science and technology students. And then he goes out and cuts $594 million from that budget. It was just amazing that on the one hand he can just get away with this rhetoric that that has no basis in fact, and then cut the legs out from under his rhetoric the next day.
Yeah, and of course there was the $70 billion supplemental surprise that didn't fit in the State of the Union message for Iraq and the ongoing occupation there. Faz, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Peter.
Faz Shakir, co-editor of the Daily Progress Report. Coming up next, investigative journalist Jason Leopold right here.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Are you having a problem making your home loan payments? Do you have equity to protect? At your wit's end, trying to figure out how you'll be able to keep your home? Would you like to speak to a highly qualified loan agent who does not charge for advice? Hi, I'm John Sullivan of Executive Financial Services in Salinas. We can advise you about negotiating with your lender. And believe me, most lenders would rather negotiate with you than own your home. We can advise you about the foreclosure process and bankruptcy filings. If you need us, you can call us 7 days a week between 10 and 7 at 443-7277. We personally answer the phone and don't pre-screen our calls. We're here to give you advice. We can give you your options 5 minutes after reviewing your credit report. We might be able to help you. We might not be able to help you. But if you never call us, you'll never know. That's 443-7277 for a five-minute solution. Executive Financial Services at 443-7277.
Life's journey is both exciting and challenging. There are times when we all need a knowledgeable and caring guide to assist us along our life's path. If you or someone you know is facing retirement, let Michelle Ashen of Ashen Senior Resources provide you with the insightful and reasoned assistance that can only be obtained by many years of dedicated study and professional experience as a certified estate planner. Michelle Ashen will show you how to create and grow wealth, how to protect and preserve your life savings. She'll show you how to distribute a portion of your life savings in the most tax-advantaged way while you are living, and how to facilitate the distribution of the remainder of your life savings in the most tax-advantaged way when you pass away. Let Michelle Ashen of Ashen Senior Resources share with you the benefit of her specialized knowledge and expertise. Make the most of your life and life savings. Call Michelle Ashen for a free consultation, 641-0236. That's 641-0236. Join R.J. Moyer for his new weekend show, About College Funding, this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding, Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank Christ, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily from 10 to 7.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show up and down the left coast. as always, you're welcome to join the conversation here on the Central Coast. You can call me. You know, I have some bad luck in investing, and it's why I've, you know, just desperately want Bush to privatize Social Security so I could lose more of my own money.
Yeah.
But I bought Enron at $60, and I sold it for 60 cents.
Oh, man. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Well,
fortunately, I didn't have a big chunk. It was my silly little effort to offset the increasing cost of electricity in California.
Right.
I thought I'd get a piece of the gougers.
You and hundreds of thousands of other people were unfortunately duped.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to talk about Enron or electricity today, Jason Leopold. You do excellent work,
and I
read you on a regular basis at truthout.org and at rawstory.com. Larissa at Raw Story is a regular on our show. John Byrne joined us yesterday. And I just want to say that your work, particularly on the Rove Wilson conflict and scandal, has been excellent.
I certainly appreciate that. You know, it's tough when you're out there alone sometimes because, you know, there used to be a time when you would be competing with a whole host of other newspapers and magazines on the same story, who can report, you know, who can basically scoop the other person. But at this point, or at least this day and age, it's a matter of, oh, God, I don't want to be out there all by myself, because you wonder, why isn't anyone else getting the same story? However, you know, I worked on this particular piece that came out today for quite a while, and I have to say, I'm not surprised. You know, I think we've all speculated and had our own opinions and suspicions about the fact that, you know, Cheney was involved in this. But to have some folks, some really, really high-level members of the administration come forward, to me at least, and say they, you know, they knew what went on is, you know, just had to run with the story.
Well, Jason Leopold, once again, you have advanced the story, and the MSM, the mainstream media, and the corporate media will be playing catch-up here over the next few days.
Yeah.
And what you appear to have affirmed through these well-placed sources is something, as you pointed out, that we've been suspicious of since the Libby indictment, if not well before.
Yeah.
And that is that Scooter didn't do this on his own.
You know, the sources... If I were to mention the names of the sources, they would recognize them in an instant. These are people who have been in the public eye. They have been they have testified before the grand jury. They have worked at the State Department, the National Security Council, and the CIA. And unfortunately, they were unwilling to go on the record simply because they feared, and I urged them to do so. They feared, you know, being attacked and just having their whole, you know, I guess their lives changed.
Let me lift two paragraphs from early in today's dispatch. The officials said they decided to speak out now because they have become disillusioned with the Bush administration's policies regarding Iraq and the flawed intelligence that led to the war.
Mm-hmm.
They said their roles, along with several others at CIA and State, included digging up or inventing embarrassing information on Ambassador Wilson that could be used against him, preparing memos and classified material on Wilson for Cheney and the National Security Council, and attending meetings in Cheney's office to discuss with Cheney, Hadley, and others the efforts that would be taken to discredit Wilson.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, in some instances, they actually just made it up out of whole cloth. And, you know, it had to do with the, you know, with the fact that they were, you know, alleging at the time. What's important is that people know that this actually took place in March 2003, about 2 to 3 weeks before the Iraq War started. The Iraq War started on March 19th. Joe Wilson was interviewed on CNN about his opinions on the pre-war Iraq intelligence and whether or not we should give the inspectors more time. And he basically had attacked the White House's policies with regards to the war. And this was March 2nd. From maybe a little less than 20, a day or two after that appearance, Cheney and Libby were at the CIA trying to get information, actually, on David Albright, who was a former weapons inspector who had also been attacking the administration. Mm-hmm. A week later, Wilson was interviewed again on CNN, and this time he laid into the White House. And he and Cheney and Hadley had taken this personally, because what Wilson had been saying is that he had specifically commented on the Niger documents that the White House had used. Now, at this time, there was speculation, even though at this time it was a day after the International Atomic Energy Association head, Mohamed El-Baradei, had told the UN that these documents were forgeries. But what his comments were taken so personally by Cheney specifically, that Cheney injected himself into this campaign to discredit Joe Wilson. And that was the genesis of what became a three-month, four-month effort to destroy this person's reputation, and what it obviously ended up in leaking his wife's identity. And Cheney, you know, we all suspect it, but he played a huge, huge role. And I certainly believe that when the trial happens, we are going to hear a lot more of that.
Another quote from Jason Leopold's article today. Read it for yourself. It's 5 pages long at truthout.org. The CIA and State Department officials, unnamed but quoted in this article, said that a day after Wilson's March 8, 2003 CNN appearance, they attended a meeting at the vice president's office chaired by Cheney, and it was there that a decision was made to discredit Wilson. Those who attended included Scooter Libby and also Hadley, White House Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove, and John Hanna, Cheney's Deputy National Security Advisor. The way I remember it, the CIA official said about that first meeting, is that the vice president was obsessed with Wilson. He called him an a-hole, an SOB. He took his comments very personally. He wanted us to do everything in our power to destroy his reputation, and he wanted to be kept up to date about the progress. Now, this does clearly link Cheney to the efforts that Libby has been indicted for.
Yeah.
And it also suggests that this was not just limited to Cheney, Libby, and those who are part of the vice president's office, but was an action of the larger White House Iraq group. Is that your impression?
That's exactly it. And in fact, the people who are in attendance, those were only the names that some of these folks remembered, more of the high-profile names. You had more of the underlings, the behind-the-scenes folks, like names that will pop up down the road will be David Wormser, maybe John Bolton, who, you know, was more mm-hmm. of in the public eye. But the White House Iraq group was the group, the organization, if you will, the committee to basically push forth the to give information to the media to publicize why Iraq was a nuclear threat, why they were an immediate threat to security, national security here, and a threat to their neighbors. And the folks that made up this group were Cheney, Libby, Stephen Hadley, Andrew Card, Karl Rove. So this is a really, really, really tight-knit group of people. And this effort, you know, took place with these folks simply because they were the ones who were, you know, pushing all the intelligence into the public, you know, into the, which is what Judith Miller was writing about in the New York Times. And so, you know, they are also the same people who played a part in it. What's interesting, however, is that, the people that I was speaking to, they said, it's not uncommon, obviously, in politics to, you know, attack your adversary or really, you know, counter what, somebody's claims that they're making. But the fact that the vice president wanted to be involved is somewhat unprecedented, they said, because this is usually left to sort of lower-level aides, you know, to send out talking points. But the fact that the vice president was so emotional and so, you know, took this so personally, they were just, you know, in hindsight, they said, they look back on it now and, you know, they realize that this was just shouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Jason Leopold, one of the other things that surfaces for me here is I know Joe Wilson. I've interviewed him numerous times and met him personally twice. And he's a Republican. He was proud of his service in Bush 1. He was the last diplomat in Baghdad before we launched Desert Storm in 91.
That's right.
He was the one who brokered the release of the human shields, the hostages that Saddam had deployed at likely targets of American missiles or bombs. And he, you know, he's a man of I think, you know, great loyalty to the United States of America. And to see this crew of neocons want to trash him by planting false information that he was a womanizer, that
right.
he had dabbled in drugs. These things you say they knew to be false or that these allegations that are apparently false were being passed around. And it's interesting that despite all the leaks, that stuff apparently was not taken seriously by any reporter.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that, you know, Joe Wilson, who's made no secret of his history in the sense that he surfed, when he was younger, he enjoyed life. Not again, I want to make it clear that that does not, you know, there is no evidence that anything that the White House said is true. But what they did is they sort of took it a step further. They said, oh, Joe Wilson liked to surf. Therefore, he was also into drugs, or he dabbled in drugs. They wasted no effort to – what they wanted to do was destroy Joe Wilson. And I've got to say, this is an example of, you know, what these folks were saying of – anyone at this time who disagreed with the White House, who disagreed with the Bush administration's policies on specifically on Iraq, they were not just attacked; they were shut down, they were muzzled, they were, you know, forget about ever, you know, speaking out again.
Well, and you quote the CIA official as saying, Cheney and Libby made it clear that Wilson had to be shut down.
Right.
This wasn't just about protecting the credibility of the White House for the vice president. Going after Wilson was purely personal, in my opinion. Again, that quotation from an unnamed CIA official.
Right.
Jason Leopold with us. We're going to take a break and continue. And I'll answer my own question from Joe McCarthy in the hearings in the 50s. Have you no shame? The answer is apparently not. We'll talk about this more as we continue. If you have a question or comment, get on the line right now, 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or toll free at 888-579-2540. You're in touch with the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA has a Valentine for you. Joan Kenley is bringing you her new Saturday show on KRXA 540. It's called Talking Matters, and you don't want to miss it. You may already know Joan as the author of Voice Power and Whose Body Is It Anyway? Or you've seen her on Oprah, CNN, Dateline, Good Morning America, or heard her on The Simpsons. Now Joan's brought her program to KRXA 540. Talking Matters starts Saturday, February 11th, 3 to 5 p.m. Her show will touch your mind, heart, body, and soul. Tune in to her Valentine's special February 11th at 3, full of laughter, tears, and great ideas. You'll hear couples with heart-pounding stories. Joan will talk about the biochemistry of love hormones and the hot topic of emotional infidelity. Learn more at TalkingMattersRadio.org. And keep talking with Joan, Saturdays at 3 on KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. We're talking with investigative reporter Jason Leopold. You can read this powerful piece about Dick Cheney's direct connection to the efforts to smear Joe Wilson. It's at truthout.org today. And Jason Leopold, before the break, I was thinking of Senator Joe McCarthy and the famous question, you know, have you no shame?
Mm-hmm.
And given the history of Joe Wilson and what, you know, the role that he played in the Bush 1 administration, it is amazing that they would smear him in the manner that they have. And furthermore, the evidence and information that you've brought forward in this groundbreaking article today, I would say, affirms that the president is not sincere when he says that when he finds the leakers, he will deal with them. And he inferred strongly that anyone who participated in this leak would no longer serve in the Bush administration.
That's
yet the
correct.
Circle is large, and only Scooter Libby has been escorted from the building.
Yeah. Well, you know, first of all, it's very important to look back on a couple of things. When the president said that, he may not have had all of the facts. However, it changed. He did not only change how he would handle the situation, but in October of 2003, just 3 or 4 months after this leak happened, the president actually went, you know, out in when he was questioned publicly about this, said, "Well, I don't know if we'll even ever find the leaker." The president seemed to, what it indicates to me is if you look at his past statements, is that it seems like the president was certainly, the president seemed to have known something. And it appeared as if he was trying to let the media know that the possibility, this is during a White House press briefing, that the possibility of ever finding the leaker wouldn't happen. Now, if you look at that, along with the Justice Department investigation of who leaked to the New York Times about the NSA spying, there's two different things going on there. On one hand, they're saying, well, we don't ever know if we'll ever find the leaker who leaked Valerie Plame's identity. There's a lot of this is a town full of leaks, and that's a quote from President Bush, whereas now with the NSA spying, they're dead set on finding who did this. So one thing definitely seems to outweigh the other. And I think the president is absolutely disingenuous. Once he learned that his top level senior officials were directly involved in this, of course, there's no evidence to suggest yet that the president knew in early 2003 that Cheney, Libby, and Karl Rove played an enormous role in this. But at the very same time, in the fall of 2003, Cheney lied when he was interviewed about this very topic. He told Tim Russert on Meet the Press he doesn't even know who Joe Wilson is, but he spent, and he certainly didn't know who leaked his wife's identity, but he certainly spent 3 months trying to find out who Joe Wilson was and then trying to destroy him.
Well, as you point out in the timeline of your article, the smear efforts began even before we launched military action, so early March of 2003. And
right.
The date of the Meet the Press interview with Russert was September 14th, 2003.
Right.
And you accurately quote Cheney, I've heard him say this, "I don't know Joe Wilson. I've never met Joe Wilson. Joe
right.
Wilson, I don't know who sent Joe Wilson. He never submitted a report that I ever saw when he came back. I don't know, Mr. Wilson. I probably shouldn't judge him. I have no idea who hired him. Now, this, of course, echoes the remarks he made about Senator John Edwards prior to their vice presidential debate, saying that they had never met, and Edwards shot back a prayer breakfast where they apparently had sat either right next to one another or very close together.
Yes.
So this is a dodge that Cheney has used before.
Yeah.
But I'd like to...
I think that, you know, there's a couple of things. One, I think it's very unfortunate that you have a topic like this, which is explosive. This should be splashed, in my opinion, on the front pages of every newspaper. There should be some sort of, you know, congressional hearing, proceeding, something, because this is an abuse of power at its worst. And I do think the story has legs. I think that once the discovery elements of the to happen after that is anyone's guess. I mean, I hate to say it, this is an administration, and this is a party, a political party, that rewards, in my opinion, criminal activity. You know, Tom DeLay being rewarded with a lucrative, coveted seat on, you know, one of these
committees
is, I don't understand it. But
Jason, we have about 3 minutes remaining. I'd like to turn now to what your sources are telling you.
Joe Wilson, and it was because that Joe Wilson threatened to expose the administration. Use of bogus documents. Now, right now, what's important for people to understand is that with the previous grand jury, the one that indicted Libby, they were impaneled for 2 years. And they handed up an indictment when their term expired. This new grand jury was just put into place, were just impaneled in November. So in a matter of a month, they were brought up to speed on 2 years' worth of investigation. So naturally, right now, they have lots and lots of questions, and that's what Fitzgerald is actually dealing with right now. The fact that it's been somewhat quiet does not mean that he's, you know, dropped the ball or he's not looking at it. It just means that the grand jury is trying to get up to speed on this very, very, very sensitive issue, and he is going back and forth to. Ask, you know, they're asking him questions, and he's responding, and he's providing them with more material.
And Jason, for the layperson's benefit, are these pretty separate tracks, the grand jury and the Libby case that's already been lodged?
Yeah, this grand jury right now is in place to, we'll put it this way, this grand jury was put into place specifically because Fitzgerald is looking at more indictments. Karl Rove is definitely somebody he's looking at. Again, it's up to the grand jury whether they believe there's not enough evidence there to hand up an indictment. But it's absolutely different than the one that was in place while they were going after Libby. This one, there's other people besides Karl Rove. I think that a lot of people knee-jerked and thought, we only got one indictment. That's it. It's over. It's not over. This is a grand jury that's impaneled for 18 months. Fitzgerald has that much time to do this. He doesn't feel that there's a rush or that he's up against a clock, so to speak. He's very meticulous. Mm-hmm. And
Jason, we've got to stop here because the clock is running out. But I thank you for joining us. And as your investigative schedule permits, you're invited on this show anytime there's a breakthrough.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Jason Leopold, read all about it at truthout.org. Coming up next, a look at the cartoon riots and the situation in Iran right here.
This is it. This is the world we live in. What are we going to do about it? It's time to stop picking parasites off your friend's hairy back and become an engaged cerebral citizen. Yes, there is more to American youth culture than McDonald's, malls, MySpace, and corporate monopolies. We have got to do better than the current apes that are in the process of turning this country into a banana republic. But we need your help. Call in, tell your friends, and listen to The Naked Ape, Sundays on KRXA.
Listen live, Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove has the finest selection of fresh local fruits, veggies, and meats. The Grove Market is also your first stop for delicious artisanal breads and other baked goods, and boasts an outstanding selection of Monterey wines. For competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey, shop at the Grove Market, Monday through Saturday, 8 to 7, 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove. 242 Forest, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Scooter Libby draws a map for prosecutors.
It's a clear arrow pointing to the vice president.
Compromise on the Patriot Act.
We've made progress here. Significant progress.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Vice President Cheney's former chief of staff, indicted in the CIA leak case, has been talking to a federal grand jury. A published report says Scooter Libby testified that in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq, his White House superiors authorized him to pass secret material to reporters. CBS News correspondent Gloria Borger has more.
Today's National Journal says that Vice President Cheney is one of those superiors who encouraged him to share classified information as part of a strategy to build a defense for the war. While the vice president has been interviewed by the special prosecutor, no one knows his testimony. The vice president's office declined any comment today.
White House spokesman Scott McClellan took the same position.
We're not going to discuss this while it's an ongoing legal proceeding.
Now this.
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. In this surly to bed and surly to rise world, it's nice to find a group of people who love what they do. The accountants at Grant Thornton are just such people. It's their passion for what they do, their expertise and partner involvement, that have made them one of the largest accounting organizations in the world, with member firms in over 100 countries. Visit grantthornton.com. It just might brighten your day, too. Grant Thornton, a passion for the business of accounting. This is Charles Osgood, and I'll see you on the radio on the Osgood File.
How hard can it be? You put up a sign, you just wait for the offers to roll in. It becomes a second job.
Getting the house appraised and the comps.
The money that you think you're going to save, you end up losing.
I've bought and sold homes before, and now the first thing I do is call a realtor.
Homes sold by a real estate professional sell for up to 16% more compared to selling on your own.
Using a realtor is a smart financial decision.
Get the facts straight about selling your own home. Talk to an agent and be sure to ask if that agent is a realtor, a member of the National Association of Realtors.
It's way too risky to sell your house on your own.
Twice now, the Patriot Act has been extended temporarily while Congress and the Bush administration wrangle over its most controversial provisions. Now, CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports a compromise seems to have cleared the way.
2 months after blocking renewal of the Patriot Act, Republican leaders of the Senate filibuster negotiated concessions from the White House, stopping warrantless searches of libraries and giving rights to those issued secret subpoenas to at least appear before a judge.
And protects both our rights and our national security interests.
It's not perfect, but it's enough, says Nebraska Republican Chuck Hagel, and Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin agrees.
We've made progress here, significant progress, progress that moves us in the right direction.
Some other Democrats say this law still gives the FBI way too much power to snoop on innocent Americans, but it is now likely to be renewed. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
There's a new video of Jill Carroll, the journalist kidnapped in Iraq more than a month ago. Seated, wearing a Muslim headscarf, she makes an urgent appeal for her captors' demands to be met.
I'm here, I'm fine. Please just do whatever they want. Give them whatever they want as quickly as possible. There is very short time. Please do it fast.
CBS News correspondent Kimberly Dozier is in Baghdad.
Hostage negotiators believe Jill Carroll has been traded to some sort of Islamic extremist group. They deduce that by the change in her clothing. She first appeared in video in a sweatshirt. Later, she was in Islamic garb. But they take heart in the fact that she hasn't been put to death despite several deadlines going by. They believe that the outreach by several Sunni leaders, several hardline Islamic leaders to the kidnappers, these appeals for Carroll's release, have helped, that the kidnappers are listening and having second thoughts.
Carroll's family says they're hopeful. The administration has said that since 9/11, at least 10 serious al-Qaeda plots have been foiled. Today, CBS News correspondent Mark Nola reports there was some amplification.
In his 10th speech on terrorism in just over 2 months, President Bush disclosed nightmarish details of a thwarted al-Qaeda plot 4 years ago, saying that 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed
had already set in motion a plan to have terrorist operatives hijack an airplane using shoe bombs to breach the cockpit door and fly the plane into the tallest building on the West Coast.
It's now known as the U.S. Bank Tower in Los Angeles. Mr. Boyle, CBS News. The White House.
The Democratic mayor of Los Angeles claims he was blindsided by the president's speech. Antonio Villaraigosa says no one at the White House gave him a heads up.
I don't want to go into all of what we knew or didn't know, but I can tell you that we did not know all of the facts that were divulged today.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Harry, what are you doing in our living room shirtless?
Don't call me Harry. My name is Thor, Prince of the Night.
Thor?
Yes, my temptress. I have traveled far to find you this treasure.
What treasure?
A treasure as unique as you, my damsel.
Yes, the summer weather continues here in February. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm Peter B. Coming up just after 4:30, we're going to talk with Tom Bissell. He's a contributing editor at Harper's Magazine. In the January issue, he wrote a lengthy and powerful piece about a recent visit to Iraq entitled Improvised, Explosive, and Divisive, Searching in Vain for a Strategy in Iraq. And it's a free speech zone all the way from 5 to 6 o'clock tonight. There are tons of stories to talk about, including the rather remarkable information we just heard from writer Jason Leopold about Dick Cheney's direct involvement in the smear campaign aimed at Joe Wilson. But this half hour, we want to get some perspective on the Islamic world, the cartoon riots, and that seems like a sneering way to put it, but I don't know a better term. These are riots provoked by a cartoon depiction of the Prophet Muhammad. And joining us is Kaveh Ehsani. He is co-editor of the Middle East Report. He's also on the editorial board of a journal about Iran called Goftugu, or something like that. Help me out there, Kaveh. Goftugu?
Goftugu, which means dialogue in Persian. And it's actually not just about Iran. It's published in Iran.
I see. Goftugu, and it's published in Iran.
And it's also, it means dialogue.
Okay. And he's a PhD candidate in the Department of Human Geography at Johns Hopkins. And we welcome you to the program today. Kaveh, it's interesting because in the last 24 hours, I've learned much more about the origins of these demonstrations, outbursts, and the anger in the Islamic world. And the New York Times published a very helpful timeline in the newspaper today, February 9th. And it shows that originally, this Danish paper reported that a writer could not find an illustrator for a book about the Prophet Muhammad. And in response, they, came up with 12 different drawings of Muhammad that were originally published on September 30th. Then there were outrages and responses from the Muslim community in Denmark, and the prime minister declined to meet with people, essentially just backed freedom of the press. And then this seemed to fester as Islamic leaders from around the world gathered in Mecca during the Hajj. And maybe you could pick up there and talk about the way these different Muslim leaders, Muslim community in Denmark, and the prime minister declined to meet with people, essentially just backed freedom of the press. And then this seemed to fester as Islamic leaders from around the world gathered in Mecca during the Hajj. And maybe you could pick up there and talk about the way these different Muslim leaders, apparently in the sidebars and the hallways, it wasn't part of the official agenda, drummed up a lot of support for some sort of response to this perceived insult from Denmark.
Yes, I read the New York Times article too, and I thought it was one of the rare cases where they actually did a fairly decent job of presenting the history and the background of the controversy. I think one of the important points that the writer in the New York Times article really brought out is the fact that this issue is not just about the cartoons. It's also it was linked with the way that tells a lot, about the way that that the whole issue basically unfolded. So it's not just the cartoons. And incidentally, the cartoons were not just a depiction of the Prophet Muhammad. They were meant to violent, and Islam itself has been depicted as terrorists and violence, without really the whole issue of these conflicts being put within the much larger historical picture.
Abe, let me ask this. We watched during December as many young immigrants in France from action between these events that broke out just in the last 2 weeks and the demonstrations and violence in France in December.
I'm not sure if there was a direct relation, but it tells you pretty much about how immigrant communities feel in Europe. I mean, we're dealing with ghettos. We're dealing with populations that are being, and this is very well documented, that are being discriminated against because of their last name, the address that they live in, the color of their skin.
By police state authorities, but also encouraged. And some of the imams who have stoked this uprising used cartoons that weren't even the ones published in Denmark. So, I understand your point, and I don't undermine it in any way, that there is a great deal of anger among Islamic immigrants to Europe. But that said, both Denmark and Norway, the two prime targets, are full of people who opposed the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. And to me, that's a much more significant factor than that they permitted some cartoons to be published.
At one level, I agree with you, but I think you're really kind of just staying at the surface of it. I mean, first of all, go back to the New York Times article that you mentioned yourself. First of all, Denmark has been supportive of the U.S.
Great deal of anger among Islamic immigrants to Europe. But that said, both Denmark and Norway, the two prime targets, are full of people who opposed the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. And to me, that's a much more significant factor than that they permitted some cartoons to be published.
At one level, I agree with you, but I think you're really kind of just staying at the surface of it. I mean, first of all, go back to the New York Times article that you mentioned yourself. First of all, Denmark has been supportive of the U.S. invasion. Back to the New York Times article that you mentioned yourself. First of all, Denmark has been supportive of the U.S. invasion. The current government in Denmark has been elected on an anti-immigrant platform. It's allied with a ultra-right-wing party. And the fact that a lot of activists within the Muslim community in Denmark try to get hold of the prime minister and get him to say, look, we're sorry, that this was a mistake. Nobody should be ridiculed based on their race or religion. This would have probably ended the matter. I mean, the question is, why wouldn't they end the matter at that point? Second, the issue of, these riots leading to violence, the invasion. The current government in Denmark has been elected on an anti-immigrant platform. It's allied with a ultra-right-wing party. And the fact that a lot of activists within the Muslim community in Denmark try to get hold of the prime minister and get him to say, look, we're sorry, that this was a mistake. Nobody should be ridiculed based on their race or religion. This would have probably ended the matter. I mean, the question is, why wouldn't they end the matter at that point? Second, the issue of, these riots leading to violence. The riots, first of all, happened in a number of places, including Afghanistan.
Claimed because parents just don't know how to properly...
The incident has all lanes now clear. The traffic's still heavy in the area, and tow trucks are on the way to clear. In Las Gatas, South 17 before Lark Avenue, a two-car collision on the shoulder. 24th at Portola, an accident with a vehicle that rolled down a driveway and struck another car. Cal State Monterey Bay Campus... also available in Carmel, Pacific Grove, and Monterey. And one last problem, Pastorville Boulevard at San Miguel Canyon Road, a broken down pickup truck.
Denmark that offended Muslims.
Maybe you people do, and maybe you want to kill each other off when you're of a different sect, but that's not the way we want to behave in a modern world.
I don't know. It's interesting that you think I'm speaking as a spokesman for some religion, and you clearly are. that exists and is exercised, which is the reason why people adopt these, react this way.
Copy.
Needs to be addressed or not. If you're willing to address it, then you're looking at the issue politically, and you're saying that, all right, how can this issue be diffused and not repeated?
Billy, go ahead.
In America, for example, we're like 80% Christian. Peter B., you're born a Christian, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Well, if I insult Jesus right now, do you think you should be allowed to harm me in any way? Or do you sort of have to be insulted and take it, and maybe you can say something about my atheist gods, or, I guess I don't have a god. I guess there's nothing maybe that's the problem.
Billy, I got to stop you there because I'm tight on time. Kavi Asani, a 15-second final comment, please.
I think, since this is the topic, I don't think the issue is really apologizing. Certainly, you look at the history of Christianity, there is quite a bit of violence and genocide in it.
Understood. I wish we had more time. Thank you for joining us today. Kaveh Asani, co-editor of the Middle East Report, here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hi, I'm Joan Kenley, bringing you Talking Matters. You may already know me as the author of Voice Power and Whose Body Is It Anyway? Or maybe you've seen me on Oprah, CNN, Dateline, and Good Morning America. Or heard my voice on The Simpsons. And now my show, Talking Matters, starts right here, Saturday, February 11th, 3 to 5 p.m. We're here to touch your mind, body, heart, and soul. Tune in to my Valentine special, February 11th at 3. It's full of laughter, tears, and great ideas. You'll hear couples with heart-pounding stories. We'll talk about the biochemistry of love hormones and the hot topic of emotional infidelity. Talking Matters, live streaming on the web and archived 24/7 at talkingmattersradio.org. So let's keep talking, Saturdays at 3 on KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience, who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Hi, this is Karen from Monterey Floral. Valentine's Day is not far away. Call Monterey Floral to order your sweetheart's bouquet. Chocolates, balloons, and foot baskets are also available. You provide the massage. Let Monterey Floral help you make this Valentine's Day extra special. We are located at 1250 Del Monte Avenue. Give us a call today, mention this ad, and receive a surprise gift. That's 641-0651. 641-0651. Remember, flowers say it all.
Hi, this is KRXA 540 News anchor Casey Lynch, inviting you to join us for a new program, Coach Casey's Call, Saturday mornings from 11 to noon. The show is dedicated to promoting local athletes and the teams they compete for. Coach Casey's Call features in-studio guests as well as listener phone calls, giving you an opportunity to join in the discussion and support the local sports scene. Join us Saturday mornings, 11 to noon, here on KRXA 540 AM for Coach Casey's Call.
When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning, fever all through the night.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Everybody's.
And when we talk about victory in Iraq, I like to dig out this Peggy Lee song called Fever.
Fever isn't such.
And the reason is that the communication strategy the White House has been using to talk about victory in Iraq was originated from a social scientist named Dr. Peter Fever at Duke University. And ever since he joined the team at the White House, apparently about 9 months ago, we've heard more and more about the strategy for victory. And even just last week in the State of the Union message, our president, well, the president, I can't call him our president, the president told us that we are on track for victory in Iraq, which, of course, he failed to define or describe in any detail. Tom Bissell is a contributing editor to Harper's Magazine, one of my favorite publications, and in the January issue, he published a lengthy piece based on a visit to Iraq called Improvised, Explosive, and Divisive, Searching in Vain for a Strategy in Iraq. Tom Bissell, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for the piece you wrote. I found it quite informative and rich in detail. And if I may, just a lift from page 2 of your article. My purpose in coming here to Iraq was to divine the current U.S. strategy against the insurgency. Before debarking for Iraq, I was asked by many people what I plan to write about. The strategy, most responded acidly. What strategy? One even quoted Homer Simpson. You went on to say that once you got to Iraq, you found that few Marines wanted to speak about tactics or strategy. In fact, I cleared a lunch table within days of my arrival when I began to ask some Marines about insurgency in general and the tactics they believed might be used to defeat it. So, Tom, as you visited there, describe for our listeners what you encountered. And your story works on kind of two levels. You give us detailed descriptions of American troops' contact with the insurgency and the great lengths they go to secure themselves from these IEDs. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you really depict for us the fact that there isn't a strategy, or if there is one, it's pretty secret.
The one thing I should say is that I traveled there to Iraq, really expressly to find a sort of good news angle to the story. I really went hoping to find people that were very engaged with the current strategic situation, hoping to talk to Marines that wanted to discuss insurgency and discuss ideas about the insurgents and who they are and what they're doing and ways that they're getting the upper hand or ways that they think that in ways in which they're vulnerable. And I found, for the most part, most of the Marines that I spoke to were not that interested. They were interested in their mission, which in many cases, because I was with a logistics unit rather than an infantry unit, the logistics units who often come under fire, in fact, who have absorbed a lot of the casualties in Iraq because they're out on these roads every night. I was with logistics Marines who were running convoys between these cities and the Sunni Triangle, often bringing each other water and ammunition, but also air. And the longer I stayed in Iraq, and I was there for 5 weeks, I began to sense that the rhetoric that the war is currently described to us, the rhetoric used to describe the war currently to us, is several galaxies apart from the actual on-the-ground situation, at least with the Marines that I was with. And I was on one of the biggest bases in the Sunni Triangle. And in saying that, I mean that they have virtually no day-to-day contact with any Iraqis other than the people that they're, how the war is being sold to us by the administration and what the soldiers themselves are sort of experiencing. Most of them, and again, I don't say this critically, most of them could not have given a rip about the future of Iraq. They just wanted to do their mission and get home. And The weird flip side of that is morale seemed actually kind of high, and in fact a lot of them were talking about re-enlisting, which implied an emotional disconnect from the actual, the prime directive of the mission they were very interested in. But all the subtleties of it, they were not. And I don't really know. I didn't really know what to come away with that. I didn't know how to come away with that in a lot of ways. It seemed just to be another really mysterious aspect of this war.
Now, you just used an interesting phrase. You said that how much closer to the truth is Jack Murtha in his depiction of the situation, A, that more than half of Iraqis think it's okay to kill Americans, B, that we are contributing, we are the irritant that is uniting to the extent possible these disparate forces arrayed against us, and that ultimately, we are the problem, and that the Iraqis won't be able to settle their differences and build any kind of a functioning nation until the U.S.
which is the most vicious aspect of the insurgency, I think, is the one least concerned with civilian damages, civilian deaths. I think that if the United States were to pull out, I think it is quite possible that Iraqis could turn on foreign fighters in their midst. However, I also think it's quite possible that something even more awful than what is happening now could happen if the United States withdrew prematurely. But that said, the path we're on now does not seem to be very tenable. And so I came away, Iraqis could turn on foreign fighters in their midst. However, I also think it's quite possible that something even more awful than what is happening now could happen if the United States withdrew prematurely. But that said, the path we're on now does not seem to be very tenable. And so I came away pretty convinced that the solutions that exist, I think you're basically selecting from a buffet of very bad possible outcomes, mm-hmm. and you're trying to take the least bad outcome at this point. And what that outcome is, I'm not entirely sure.
I do understand. And one of the comments you made referred to the prospect of civil war. And there are many people who believe those elements are already present. They're just somewhat submerged because of the U.S. occupation. But we know, for example, that U.S. forces have been used by both Sunnis and Shiites.
That's probably right. And barring the emergence of some extraordinarily level-headed Iraqi leadership, or even some really inspired Iraqi leadership, I think that's probably exactly right. And it's painful to say that, but I think that's probably true. And I am coming to think that we're going to see, as with Kissinger and Nixon in 1973, kind of a declaration of victory, forcing the terms of that victory down the throats of the standing Iraqi government, and then abandonment is not the word I want to use, but a very speedy departure and
a constructive disengagement.
Yes, constructive disengagement.
First, Tom, don't we got to get that oil that those damn Iraqis are sitting on? It's our oil.
Yeah, well, I think one of the many things to have not exactly taken shape the way anyone in the Bush administration expected it to has been the oil situation, which, as far as I can understand, has been a total bust.
Tom, we've got to pause for a break. We'll pick up there as we continue with Tom Bissell. He's a contributing editor to Harper's Magazine, and this piece appeared in the January edition. It is entitled Improvised, Explosive, and Divisive, Searching in Vain for a Strategy in Iraq. Questions or comments? Bring them on. 831-899-5792 or toll free from Eureka or anywhere else within the sound of my voice, 888-579-2540. That's 1-888-579-2540. It's 4:44 now, and you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
This is it. This is the world we live in. What are we going to do about it? It's time to stop picking parasites off your friend's hairy back and become an engaged cerebral citizen. Yes, there is more to American youth culture than McDonald's, malls, MySpace, and corporate monopolies. We have got to do better than the current apes that are in the process of turning this country into a banana republic. But we need your help. Call in, tell your friends, and listen to The Naked Ape, Sundays on KRXA.
Listen live, Sundays from 12 to 1 p.m.
Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you interesting topics from the world of food, wine, and fun. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, winemakers, restaurateurs, chefs, farmers, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by the Monterey County Growers and Vintners Association's 4th Annual Passport Weekend, February 17th, 18th, and 19th. Travel the world without packing a suitcase.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic. Now it's 446, and here's Amy Knight.
Looks like we have a few things to talk about. Highway 1 and Carpenter Street, watch out for lots of debris in the roadway. Also, a new problem, southbound 1 at Highway 68, getting reports of a new accident with the Highway Patrol on scene. Also, don't forget about the golf tournament that started today. Shuttles are available in Carmel, Pacific Grove, and Monterey, and expect slow traffic as spectators leave the course just about now. Also, 24th Avenue at Portola Drive in Twin Lakes, a vehicle rolled down a driveway and struck another car. Heavy traffic in the area. Highway Patrol and emergency crews are on scene, but expect delays. Toyota owners, right now your participating Genuine Toyota Service Center is giving away gas cards worth up to $20 with qualifying service or tire purchases. Restrictions apply. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA 540.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, and we're talking about the 51st state of occupied Iraq. I'm Peter B. My guest is Tom Bissell, contributing editor to Harper's Magazine. As I mentioned, the January edition features his lengthy piece called Improvised, Explosive, and Divisive, Searching in Vain for a Strategy in Iraq. And Tom Bissell, we've heard repeatedly from the president and vice president that when Iraqis stand up, we will stand down. Yet the reports indicate that the training of both the police forces and military units lags well behind what we've been told by the Bush administration. Just yesterday, the Special Inspector General for Iraq reported to Congress that on every measure, whether it is the oil output, the hours of electricity, the kilowatts generated, the quality of the water supply, all of these are deficient from pre-war standards or pre-war levels, and things weren't great before the war because of the sanctions and because of the conscious choices of the Saddam Hussein regime. The infrastructure and the quality of life took a big hit during the last 12 years since the end of hostilities over Kuwait. So when you look at that picture, and the what you described earlier about the galaxies of difference between what we've been told and what is observed on the ground, are all of those factors as I just described them, or did you find anything different?
What I mostly chose to study was the strategy of training the new Iraqi army, which is what the express purpose I went over there. And in fact, I was told that I would have lots of access to that, I got precisely one day with the Iraqi trainees. And I walked into the training site where a terrific Marine, a warrant officer, who seemed an absolutely wonderful guy. His enthusiasm for working with Iraqi soldiers was completely infectious, and he seemed really smart and really decent man. And yet when I walked in, they were going over basically how to handle compasses. And as I wrote in the piece, however you feel about this war, I don't think anyone counted upon training thousands of people how to use a compass to see what this war would come down to. I do know that the administration has pretty criminally exaggerated the number of troops that have been quote-unquote trained. The training has been so erratic that the first version of it, which was, of course, sourced out to a non-governmental company, was so bad they had to scrap it. They began training people again through the auspices of the military, but the first batch of trainees proved unwilling to fight in Fallujah. These problems have been plaguing, they've been plaguing this new Iraqi army since the beginning. What the answer is to that, I'm not really sure, but I do know that, and I also wrote this in the article, that if our strategy is truly sort of passing the buck to a military that was sort of humiliated twice on the battlefield by the United States to destroy an insurgency it didn't create, I can sort of understand why not a lot of Iraqi soldiers would be terribly enthusiastic. And I think the insurgency has proven really deviously brilliant at the tenacity with which they keep striking at Iraqi soldiers themselves, trainees themselves. I think that has truly been one of the most horrifying and most, I think it's really beleaguered a lot of the people in that military, and I think that it's kind of fragmented the morale there, and in fact it's also increased the civil warish aspects of the Shia-Sunni divide within the new Iraqi army.
I do agree about what you described there, the devious way, and it has been very effective in curtailing recruitment by targeting the police cadets and the military trainees. It has been remarkably effective and is part of the strategy that has flummoxed American forces. The other part of it is that you touched on in the first segment that we don't have enough translators, and the interaction between Americans and Iraqis has got to be challenging and also, you know, very imperfect. And so, for example, how does an American on patrol make a distinction between somebody who is, just a bad actor, the equivalent of being drunk in public or disorderly conduct, and somebody who is a true threat to them? Because it's very hard to distinguish between the various types of potential threats that they face at any given moment.
I think that's a great question, and I say this not to insult the quality of our soldiers or anything, which I think is, in fact, it's pretty high, but the fact is a lot of the enlisted guys that I talk to did not know a hell of a lot about Iraq. They didn't know a lot about Iraqi history. They didn't know a lot about the culture or the country. They didn't know that much about the Middle East. And so what we're doing is we're putting some kids who are very good at their jobs, i.e. soldiering, not so good at the cultural / historical questions that they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, and you're putting them in a situation where the decisions they're making on the fly, just as you described, can have, like, worldwide ramifications, And so these kids are in I do not call them kids patronizingly. Mm-hmm. These kids are in a situation that they have not really been adequately trained. I'll just say it outright. They have not been adequately trained to deal with the kinds of challenges that the insurgency warfare in an Arab country has presented them. And I think that the reason why the insurgency grew so quickly is part of the reason because it was so effective so early because, A, it was not expected, and, B, I think the first wave of soldiers there just had no idea how to deal with it. There really is in the military this kind of, let's go out and kill the MS. And I don't think that's a really great way to fight insurgents. And I think, as we saw in Fallujah, that was a trap, I think, that they created, you know, by killing those contractors. They basically lured the soldiers into that city for that standoff, which caused huge civilian casualties, which I think dispirited a lot of Iraqis who were maybe not pro-coalition, but certainly willing to give them a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've seen from the siege of Fallujah on today a marked decision by the military to basically avoid having contact with the Iraqi people as much as humanly possible.
Yeah.
And I think the only people who are doing a lot of that are the civic affairs people in Iraq, special forces in Iraq, but I think they're mostly dealing with clerics, with city councils. As far as soldiers going out there and mixing with Iraqi people, I think there's almost none of that, which is a lot different than even a war like, say, Vietnam was. And in fact, I can say the only good thing about the war in Iraq is I don't think there are going to be a whole heck of a lot of American Iraqi babies after the end of it, the war in Vietnam.
That's very interesting. Tom Bissell with us, contributing editor at Harper's Magazine. And separate from this powerful story on Iraq, he has a new collection of stories published in paperback from Vintage entitled God Lives in St. Petersburg. Let's take a caller. Dennis is on the line from King City. Hi, Dennis. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, guys. Listen, a quick question. Haven't we created a Catch-22 along with all our other problems? How much money is being paid to Iraqis by the Americans to do work for us? And isn't this going to create a real problem if we do pull out? I mean, when we do pull out, how much of a problem is this going to be? Because that's got to be the only jobs a lot of them have, is working for Americans.
Well, I can say the base that I was on, which is Alta Qadim in the Sunni Triangle, there was not a single Iraqi national working on that base. All of they're called PCN, third country nationals. The ones that I saw were all from Bangladesh, the Philippines, Malaysia, and they did a lot of the menial work on the base, but I didn't see many Iraqis working for the military at all. When I was in the Green Zone, the coalition, there were a lot of Iraqis working for the coalition there. And how well they're going to do after we withdraw, I think, is only going to be determined by how seriously the Iraqi government is taken by the people. I'm not sure there's an answer to that question as to what's going to happen to the Iraqis who are under American, who are operating with American pay.
Dennis, thanks for your call. I don't have much more time. Tom Bissell, I just want to turn finally to the title of your article is a play on the phrase IED, the improvised explosive device.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about how pernicious these are and how RGIs deal with them.
Well, it's one of the most fascinating things that I found is that the evolution of the IED. The first Humvees that went to Iraq were not armored. The insurgents figured that out. They created roadside bombs. There was a great outcry in this country about that. The Humvees got armored. They created diversionary IEDs, and this is fascinating. They studied what military doctrine is, how far you park your Humvee away from the first IED. When you see one, then there's a standard operating procedure. So they noted how far they would park the Humvees away. Then they started putting the second more powerful hidden IED where they marked off where the Humvees would stop. So it's like whatever the military did to counter the IED, the insurgents would figure out a way to and it's been this amazing chess match between these insurgents working with what are pretty primitive weapons in some cases, although but not all cases, and this military that our military, which of course counted these IEDs, was really interesting. And some of the guys.
Tom, I'm sorry, we're out of time. Tom Bissell, Harper's contributing editor. Read the January edition for more about searching for a strategy in Iraq. I'm Peter B. Collins. Michelle Ashen of Ashen Senior Resources is an IRA distribution specialist. Other than your home, your retirement plan is probably the largest investment you have. And you have a choice. You can pass it on to your beneficiaries as a legacy, or it can be left as an IOU to Uncle Sam. Chaos can lead to confusion. Most financial advisors...
CBS News. I'm Dave Barrett. The Patriot Act is designed to crack down on terrorists, but there are concerns about civil liberties. The act has been extended into next month, but now there's a move in the works, which correspondent Bob Fuss explains.
Republican leaders of the Senate filibuster that has blocked renewal of the Patriot Act since December say the White House has now agreed to several small changes to protect civil liberties, including barring secret searches of library records. New Hampshire Republican John Sununu said this was an important fight.
We could do better. We could simply do better.
better to protect civil liberties, even as we gave law enforcement important tools.
Though some Democrats say this law still gives the FBI way too much power to snoop on Americans, the Senate's number two Democrat, Dick Durbin, supports it, suggesting the Patriot Act filibuster is now likely to end. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
It was a terror plan to be carried out in 2002. The president provided some details today.
I'm Mark Noller at the White House. The Al-Qaeda plot called for crashing a hijacked plane into the Los Angeles building now known as the U.S. Bank Tower. Mr. Bush said it was the work of 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and involved using shoe bombs to breach the cockpit door of the aircraft. He said terrorists from Southeast Asia rather than the Middle East were to be used.
Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villagrosa says he did not know that the details would be made public today.
I'm not expecting a call from the president himself, but certainly somebody from the White House informing us of all of the things that they were going to be saying on national TV.
It's alleged on the National Journal website that former Vice Presidential Chief of Staff Louis Libby said superiors encouraged the leaking of secret information to justify the war in Iraq. At the White House today, spokesman Scott McClellan.
I think you know our policy when it comes to this ongoing legal proceeding. And it hasn't changed.
Do you know anything about any authorization to release
Well, again, I mean, our policy is we're not going to discuss this while it's an ongoing legal proceeding, and that remains our policy.
American journalist Jill Carroll surfaces again on a video, one shown on Kuwaiti television. She was taken hostage in Iraq just over a month ago.
Here, I'm fine. Please just do whatever they want. Give them whatever they want as quickly as possible. There is very short time. Please do it fast.
To Baghdad and CBS's Kimberly Dozier.
Hostage negotiators believe that Jill Carroll has been traded to some sort of an extremist group, possibly a group with links to Al-Qaeda. They deduce this by watching the change of her dress in the videos. She was in Western-style clothing, and in the last two videos, she was wearing a veil.
Captors had originally demanded that women held by the U.S. and by Iraq be released, or journalist Jill Carroll would be executed. Wall Street today, the Dow gained nearly 25 points and closed the day at 10,883. The NASDAQ lost 11. It finished up at 2,255. This is CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic weekend getaway? Well, how about 3 days and two nights in Las Vegas at a major strip resort? And what about you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas' newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge. Stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on, you know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 877-33-GO-WIN. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 877-33-GO-WIN for all the exciting details. That's 877-33-GO-WIN. Call now.
American speed skater Chris Whitty is about to compete in her fifth Olympics overall. That includes a trip to the Summer Games in Sydney. Whitty has gone public with her story of being sexually abused as a child. She now works to help other victims. Chris Whitty has been honored by her fellow Olympic teammates who voted for her to carry the U.S. flag tomorrow into the opening ceremonies at Torino. Last night's Grammy Awards, they were watched by many. But nearly twice as many viewers tuned into American Idol.
It doesn't matter what it is, the Grammys, anything. You step in front of the steaming locomotive that is American Idol, and likely you're going to get blown off the track.
Robert Thompson is professor of TV and pop culture at Syracuse University. Despite the fact that Kanye West, Bruce Springsteen, Jay-Z, Paul McCartney, even Sly Stone performed at the Grammys, roughly 15 million people watch, and that's quite a contrast to the 28 million who chose American Idol. I'm Dave Barrett, CBS News.
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. In this surly to bed and surly to rise world, it's nice to find a group of people who love what they do. The accountants at Grant Thornton are just such people. It's their passion for what they do, their expertise and partner involvement that have made them one of the largest accounting organizations in the world, with member firms in over 100 countries. Visit grantthornton.com. It just might brighten your day, too. Grant Thornton, a passion for the business of accounting. This is Charles Osgood, and I'll see you on the radio on the Osgood File.
How hard can it be? You put up a sign, you just wait for the offers to roll in. It becomes a second job.
Getting the house appraised and the comps.
The money that you think you're going to save, you end up losing.
I've bought and sold homes before, and now the first thing I do is call a realtor.
Homes sold by a real estate professional sell for up to 16% more compared to selling on your own.
Using a realtor is a smart financial decision.
Get the facts straight about selling your own home. Talk to an agent and be sure to ask if that agent is a realtor, a member of the National Association of Realtors.
It's way too risky to sell your house on your own.
Peter B. Collins.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show as we head into the free speech zone this evening. All my lines are open. Any viewpoint, any subject, welcome here. That's the song they opened the Grammys with last night. And I'm still reeling that twice as many people watched American Idol as watching the professional musicians perform on the Grammys. I don't get it. That's a group called Gorillaz. I still don't know much about them, but I find that one of the catchiest hooks in the music scene in 2005. I'm glad to see them receiving recognition last night on the Grammys. And if you want to talk about the Grammys, you can do that. But there are many other important things to talk about, and maybe you heard our conversation earlier today about how Tom DeLay, despite being in disgrace and failing or withdrawing his claim on the majority leader post in the House, well, they quietly put him on the appropriations panel in the seat vacated by Randy Cunningham, the guy who pled guilty to bribes. Now, that's a very interesting handoff of that seat, but it also shows that the Republicans don't seem to think they have much to risk by keeping DeLay in a very active role, despite his connections to Abramoff, the K Street Project, and much of the graft in the Republican system there in Washington, D.C., as they enjoy the fruits of one-party rule. Maybe you'd like to talk about Jason Leopold, the incredible investigative journalist who joined us between 3:30 and 4 today and detailed the connections that show that Dick Cheney was clearly in charge of the effort to smear Joe Wilson. In fact, it appeared to start really distracting and obsessing the vice president in the weeks before we launched the invasion of Iraq in March of 2003. And you can read that whole story at truthout.org. It's a powerful one, and it does move the ball down the field. It'll be interesting to see how Patrick Fitzgerald treats this information. And ultimately, I do believe that if Scooter Libby is convicted, that he'll take Dick Cheney down with him. That will be a very interesting day. We can also talk about Islamic reaction to those cartoons in Denmark, the riots, the deaths. More than 11 people have died in Afghanistan alone. We also had a very interesting conversation with Tom Bissell from Harper's Magazine just in the past half hour. So any of those are up for grabs, including other subjects. Here are my numbers on the Central Coast. You can call me. It's a local call, 831-899-5792. That's 831-899-5792. And then the toll-free lines available from Eureka or anywhere else, 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. And if you want to drop me an email, there are two ways to do it, peter@krxa540.com or peter@peterbcollins.com. It all gets to me eventually, one way or another. One thing that we've seen that has been so disturbing during this era of Republican one-party rule in Washington is the failure of our media to serve us appropriately and to serve as an important check on the excesses of the Republicans in power. One such example that is just another indication of why we have to trust the British media to break our news more than the American media is evidence today on the front page of the New York Times. I picked up my paper this morning and I said, gosh, I've seen this story before. But it is the lead story in the upper right corner. It reads, tough U.S. steps in hunger strike at camp in Cuba, force feeding detainees. And the lead paragraph, United States military authorities have taken tougher measures to force feed detainees engaged in hunger strikes at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, after concluding that some were determined to commit suicide to protest their indefinite confinement. Now, this story was published for the first time in the New York Times and the first time I've seen it in the United States today, February 9th, 2006. And in my stack of clippings and printouts here in my messy studio, I have this article from the Observer of London, dated Sunday, January 8th, 2006. It reads, scandal of force-fed prisoners. Hunger strikers are tied down and fed through nasal tube, admits Guantanamo Bay doctor. Their first paragraph, again, more than a month ahead of the New York Times. New details have emerged of how the growing number of prisoners on hunger strike at Guantanamo Bay are being tied down and force-fed through tubes pushed down their nasal passages into their stomachs to keep them alive. They routinely experience bleeding and nausea, according to a sworn statement by the camp's chief doctor. So, I think this is an important story. I think Americans deserve to know the lengths to which we go to keep these detainees alive, despite the fact that we refuse to charge them, refuse to give them basic, fundamental, legal, and criminal justice rights. And these may be very, 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 very bad guys. I understand that. But I don't care how bad they are. When we treat people in a subhuman manner, it sends a powerful message that we are subhuman. And it encourages others to treat us in that same way. It allows them to rationalize atrocious behavior, barbaric behavior against Americans. And so far, with the exception of hostages like Jill Carroll and others, Nicholas Berg, most Americans in uniform have avoided being captured by our enemy and subjected to the kinds of barbaric behavior and tactics that we use on them. And I read the New York Times every day. And I have to say, I've gotten more and more skeptical of their reporting. And I have to ask once again, why did it take a month for the New York Times to recognize that this is a story that deserved front page attention? I don't know the answer to that, but it won't stop me from asking. Let's go to your calls. I'd like to hear from you. This is an entire open phone hour, free speech zone, monitored by the NSA. And you can call me at 831-899-5792. Or toll-free, 888-579-2540. Tara in Bayside, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. Nobody has force-fed me yet.
Isn't that horrendous?
It is.
It's humiliating to know that this is going on, and every one of us hasn't kind of taken up a pitchfork and gone to Washington. It's torture. That's what it is.
Yes, it is. And it is a, you know, I believe it's a violation of the Geneva Conventions, but of course we have Alberto Gonzalez to tell us how quaint the Geneva Conventions are. And bottom line, if you don't want to listen to a, you know, a flaming liberal like me, listen to John McCain. And he can tell you that this kind of torture is not only misguided, but it is counterproductive, and we will pay a significant price for it.
We change the world by our behavior. The people who are rioting around the world,
Tara, talk right into that phone, please. It's a little bit faint there. Go ahead.
The people who are rioting around the world, I seriously doubt, are rioting about a cartoon. I think they're rioting about our behavior around the world. And the cartoon just gave them an excuse, an impetus. I know that I was watching television last night, and I've given up on television and now watch the comedy station.
Yeah.
They had a King of the Hill on. I didn't see the whole thing, so I don't know how it ended. But Jesus Christ and the devil were having a boxing match, and nobody wanted to bet on Jesus Christ because he was too skinny.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is the kind of thing that I haven't heard a single person comment about today. Up in arms, burning down a building. People talk about, okay, let's do cartoons of the Holocaust. We seem to be confusing deities for events. And how did the Holocaust get into it to begin with?
Well, that's just neener neener. That's an attempt to pay back, to hit the vulnerabilities of the presumed polar opposite of the Islamic world. It shows their bias, and it shows that, oh, you know, when you try to get into I'll clean this up for broadcast, a peeing contest, nobody smells good, and everybody ends up with a wet leg. And I just think that we need to find a way to detach from the anger of the moment and try to address some of the underlying issues. Kaveh Asani was with us last hour, and I do understand the larger context, but I cannot escape the simple fundamental fact that these are cartoons, and that even though in some cases they were attempted to caricature or ridicule the holiest man of Islam, they are cartoons, and nobody forced anybody to look at them, and that is a pluralistic, secular world. And clearly, these Muslims who are responding in such a dramatic fashion don't support that. But they're trying to foist their approach on us, and it isn't going to work. So we have to find some other middle ground, and I'm not sure where it is. Tara, thanks for the call. More of your calls coming up after a quick break. 831-899-5792 or 888-579-2540. We're knee-deep in the free speech zone here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it, in 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. The choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get
get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2-1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Join R.J. Moyer for his new weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
KRXA 540 checks your traffic at 521. Here's Amy Knight.
A problem in Salinas, South 101 at Spence Road. An injury accident involving a big rig and a car blocking the left lane. Also, a new injury accident, Southbound 1 at Fremont in Sand City. It is in the center divide. Southbound 1 at 68, an accident there. And North 101 at Call, reports of a car missing 40 years now in a wiper blade. Try Mr. Clean wiper blades today. Amy Knight with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Amy. We'll check back with you about 545. And Casey's got your traffic every weekday morning on the Stephanie Miller Show, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on KRXA 540. First of all, Dick Cheney went on television and hogged up the whole Lehrer News Hour on Tuesday, and he flatly said that they have all the legal authority they need, they don't want to go to Congress, and most importantly, he did not want to see every member of the intelligence committees of the House and Senate briefed on the operational details of this so successful program, the one that he claims without any proof has saved thousands of American lives. Well, they backpedaled on that within 12 hours. Yesterday, after Heather Wilson, a Republican from New Mexico, went public with her call for full hearings and an investigation of the NSA spying issues, well, they decided maybe they can brief the intelligence committees, and so, without notice, they convened the House Intelligence Committee for 3 or 4 hours yesterday, and General Hayden and Attorney General Gonzalez briefed them. We, of course, don't know the details because it was top secret, and today they were going to turn around and do it for the Senate. And George W. Bush gave new details today about a plot that they say they broke up just after 9/11, around October of 2002, that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who is now in our custody at one of the unnamed detention centers around the world, had already begun planning this West Coast operation. The idea was some shoe bombers would blow open a cockpit door, take control of a plane, and crash it into the library tower in downtown L.A. And as Matt Renner, my able producer, pointed out, we don't believe that we had hardened the cockpit doors by this time. So I think the president was muddling his history there, but he was so eager to tell us about this operation that we broke up with the help of some unnamed allies that he may have gotten the facts a little bit jumbled up. So, do you believe that? Do you believe that? Answer the question. Give me a call and let me know. Ben and Salinas, thanks for calling. You're next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yes, sir. How are they going to bring down how are they going to blow open the blast doors on a cockpit without bringing that damn plane down? I mean, a moron can see through that.
Well, there are a number of holes, and that's just another good question to ask, because you're right. If you blow up a shoe bomb, particularly while a plane is pressurized in air, you're probably just going to take that plane down.
Those windows come right out. I need your help on something, Peter. Am I correct in understanding Tom DeLay was today appointed to some appropriations committee? This guy accused of money laundering?
That's right. He was given the seat vacated by Randy Cunningham.
I mean, holy cow, who in the hell is watching the hen coop?
Well, they needed somebody as corrupt as Cunningham to take over his seat.
And another thing, if I'm wrong on this, in the new proposals for the Social Security cuts that Adolf wants to make there on the Social Security, the three he wants to cut are the death benefits, that's about $250, plus women who lose their husbands, they can't continue getting his Social Security, and the young people under 18 who lose their parents. So they're attacking widows and orphans and a death benefit. I mean, is there nothing, you rednecks in the red states, wake up, you know, Republicans are going to go down on this thing too. It's your country too that's being looted and stolen. What do you put first, your own family security, your love for America, or your religious white right-wing fascist beliefs?
Well, and just the greed of it all, because Ben, to be able to rationalize the cuts that you just described, and you are accurate that they are part of the budget proposal, plus the secret slush fund to remodel Social Security, even though Congress has refused to take up the president's proposals in any form.
I heard the figure $70 billion.
Yeah. So, what we have here, and we have to contrast this, Ben, with their obsession with extending the tax cuts, and this is so irresponsible. You and I don't know what our incomes are going to be in 2010, and we would not commit to a burden, right, of debt or spending that would, possibly be double or triple what we expect our income to be in 2010. Yet this Republican Congress, many of the same people who embraced the contract with America that called for a balanced budget constitutional amendment, these people are driving us into the ground, fiscally speaking, and they're doing it to help millionaires get richer.
And these wealthy elite, do they realize that they're selling the futures of our children? The men of America are going to stand up and be the man of America and save that which we have? My father always told me that we paid our taxes and Social Security into the government for those that didn't come back alive. They came back minus their arms.
We got to go, Ben. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
If you own a Volvo and you want quality repairs and great service at a fair price, then take your Volvo to Hunt's Auto Repair in Seaside. They only work on Volvos, and they can do any needed service and repair, including all factory recommended maintenance. Owner Mike Brooks is a Volvo certified and factory trained technician with over 16 years experience. Mike's partner Tracy is also a factory trained Volvo service advisor. Many Volvo owners in the area already know and trust Tracy to take care of their Volvos.
Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside, is a locally owned and family operated full service Volvo repair shop, where Mike and I feature honest, quality service at a fair price.
Bring your Volvo to us, and we'll do everything possible to ensure that you leave satisfied and fully informed about your Volvo. Remember, that's Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside. For more info, give us a call at 583-9820.
That's 583-9820.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market.
So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
I've never seen so many knobs. We're gonna have to do something, Charlie. Try pushing that button now. No? How about that one?
No?
I don't either. I know. I'll try pushing this one. Put my hat, will you? That's a good fella.
Be careful when confronted with an array of buttons. Push carefully. This is the Peter B. Collins Show, rocketing into the 6 o'clock hour. It's 5:33 now up and down the left coast. Your calls are welcome. There are three lines open here at 831-899-5792 or toll-free from anywhere within the sound of my voice. It's 1-888-579-2540. 888-579-2540. You got it? We got Jake and Arcata up next. Hello, Jake. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, how's it going, Peter?
Doing okay today, thanks.
Hey, I'd like to talk about the impending resignation of Dick Cheney, but first, I'd like to throw out a programming suggestion to KGOE up here in Eureka, Tom Seaborn, if he's listening, I believe. You guys down there, you're good enough to run Bill Press's program, I believe, from 3 to 6 in the morning, is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're not running that up here. We should be. Right now, they got the top 10 countdown or whatever. Some Republican host. It's a lousy program. They need to put Bill Press on in Eureka. So hopefully, the callers can call KGOE and make that happen.
All right. And next time I talk to Tom, I'll mention your suggestion, Jake.
Thank you, Peter. Anyways, I'm going on to Dick Cheney. You know, it just amazes me that people are even questioning the fact that, of course, Cheney authorized Libby to leak, Valerie Plame's identity. I mean, the fact is, of course, Libby, he's just Cheney's, errand boy. Why is this even a question? And why is Cheney still even in office? I'm glad you had Jason Leopold on today. You know, people who want to know about this, please go to truthout.org. Leopold's been doing some great work, especially on the NSA story.
Yeah.
Where they've been saying that Bush authorized this illegal spying program after 9/11, but Leopold has uncovered documents that prove he authorized this as soon as he came into office in 2001, long before 9/11. So the question is, if they were doing all this spying domestically before 9/11, did they know what was going to happen? I think there's a pretty good guess that they did, Peter. And hopefully we can have some real investigation that gets to the bottom of it.
Well, as you know, Jake, I firmly believe that we haven't been told the truth about 9/11, about its origins, about what actually happened that day, about the failure of NORAD, about the glaring inconsistencies in the stories we've been told, particularly about the attack on the Pentagon and whether that was truly an airliner that crashed in there and not a missile, as many people believe. And that's just scratching the surface. We know about the options, the puts that were placed on United and American Airlines stock in the days before 9/11, and somebody earned millions of dollars on that diabolical wager. And to date, we don't know that anybody has claimed their winnings, but the stories are certainly unexplained. And for people who think that I'm, you know, captive to some sort of dark and unbelievable conspiracy theory, I just invite you to read the two books by David Ray Griffin. He is a theologian who has no political stake in proving that Bush, you know, may have had some prior knowledge or even potentially complicity in the attacks on our nation of 9/11/01. But I am very firm in stating that the questions linger, the answers are far from sufficient, and there's much more to that story than we know to date.
Absolutely, Peter. I would also, you know, suggest that if people have not yet seen 9/11 in plain sight, this is a documentary where they show, you're talking about the Pentagon, they show the original footage shot by all the networks, ABC, NBC, Fox, that show the damage of the Pentagon consists of a hole of about 16 feet in diameter, and there is no plane wreckage. It is obviously a missile strike, okay? And they have it on video, and they simply are not letting us see the evidence. But in this movie, 9/11 in Plain Sight, they've got it. I suggest everyone go check it out. They can go online to thepowerhour.com. And find the movie, thepowerhour.com.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And people need to find out.
It is remarkable when you look at those pictures and realize, Jake, as you've said, that the media could put them out if they wanted to. They choose not to. And, you know, likewise, 9/11 in Plain Sight shows a bizarre development, which is that the second jetliner that went into the second World Trade Center tower had something dangling underneath it. And again, I can't explain what it is. I can't explain what its function may or may not have been. But there clearly was something suspended from the belly of that plane. And when you look at the slow-mo shots, I think it's Dave Van Ronk who produced that piece. You know, the question is clear. The answer is not.
That's right. And let me tell you, if you've not seen those close-ups of the planes that hit the towers, you must, because that second plane they said was a United Airlines commercial airliner. Well, there are no windows on the side of that plane, and it's not even the right color. So I don't know why the media wants to pretend like this story that they've told us, this big lie of Hitlerian proportions that, you know, the Bush people have come up with, is the truth, because it's not.
And this, Jake, consider, we know now from another leaked memo from Britain, from Downing Street, that there was a meeting at the White House between Bush and Blair late January 2003, and two things came up. One was that Bush made it clear that he didn't give a damn whether there was another UN resolution, that we were going to lead the phony coalition into Iraq in March of 2003. And the other thing that he discussed with Blair was brainstorming about a way to come up with an additional provocation to justify a unilateral invasion of Iraq. And what was it involved with? It was taking a plane and painting it with United Nations colors and insignia, and then shooting it down over Iraq and blaming Saddam. Now, if you, you know, listen to that raving from our president, we're grateful that, from all accounts, the idea was not implemented or activated. But if that's the kind of idea that occurs to this president, then what you just described about the markings of the second airliner that was flown into the second World Trade Center tower, well, that leads one to believe that this is a tactic that was known to the Bush administration and possibly used before he suggested using it on Iraq.
Well, that's right. And if anybody's familiar, of course, with Operation Northwoods, where the Pentagon, you know, 40 years ago, wanted to use some similar provocations of hijacked airliners, and in fact were drones, to start a war with Cuba. I mean, this is planning that's gone on for quite a while. And it's out there in the open. All that people have to do is read Project for the New American Century's document, Rebuilding America's Defenses. I mean, they say it right there on page 51. All these changes that the neocons want in military and foreign policy, the only way they're going to get it is through a new Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
And like David Ray Griffin said in his book, that's what the Bush people got. And don't pretend like it was a surprise or an accident.
Jake, you're very well informed, and mentioning the Northwoods proposal just brought one other thing to mind, and that was it was not only about using an airplane for a phony provocation related to Cuba, but they had a scheme in which they would have the dummy plane that got shot down, and they would replace it in the air, replace the original airliner that had passengers and was, you know, a normal, regular plane. And so if you look at that as a precedent and as an idea that was available in the playbook at the time, well, we couldn't be shocked if we learned that those kinds of tactics were used on 9/11, and we can't be shocked if they originated with our own government. Jake, thanks a lot. Good to talk to you today. Dave and Humboldt, you're next on the Peter B. Show. Go ahead.
Well, Peter, you're just about there on 9/11. I also recommend very highly an author that I met through you more than a year ago, and that's Jim Mars on The Inside Job. You can't buy it in any bookstores. You have to look it up on a search engine. But I don't put anything beyond these folks now, and I think anybody that would believe a word that Bush or Cheney or Rumsfeld or Condoleezza or any of those cons has to say today, they'll believe damn near anything from anybody. Because I just learned earlier today that they have shorted the veterans' hospitals several, $80 billion or something like that, and told the Veterans Administration to say that they were fully funded. It's just one thing after another. They're the most destructive government that we could ever conceive of having. We can't outwait them. We've got to get rid of them.
So where do we go next, Dave?
God, I don't know, Peter. I'm relying on some people that really, you got to have some think tanks to say, what do you do when you're faced with something this outrageously disastrous, this destructive to a country? It's taken a long time for this to become a beautiful nation to live in. It's taken them a very short time to take all that away.
Yeah, that's true. The wrecking crew, you know, it's much easier to destroy things than it is to build them.
Yeah.
And they have demonstrated that in spades in just 5 years.
Today's Alice's 92nd birthday. We're off to the parties.
Well, give her my best, will you?
We'll do that, Peter.
And hoist one in her honor and in my name.
Okay.
All right, Dave.
Take care.
Thank you. That leaves a line open for you. 831-899-5792 Central Coast. Toll free from Eureka or elsewhere. 1-888-579-2540. You're listening to the Free Speech Zone on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Joan Kenley, bringing you Talking Matters. You may already know me as the author of Voice Power and Whose Body Is It Anyway? Or maybe you've seen me on Oprah, CNN, Dateline, and Good Morning America, or heard my voice on The Simpsons. But now I can invite you to join me on my own show, Talking Matters, starting right here Saturday, February 11, 3 to 5 p.m. We'll talk about matters that touch your mind, body, heart, and soul. We'll explore your dreams, secrets, hopes, and sorrows. How are you really dealing with today's world? Do you ever feel overwhelmed? Tune in for inspiring stories, useful ideas, and surprising ahas. Talking Matters, live streaming on the web, and archived 24/7 at talkingmattersradio.org. So let's keep talking, Saturdays at 3 on KRXA 540.
Please join House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi and former White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta as they celebrate Congressman Sam Farr's 30 years of public service. Sunday, February 12th at the Hyatt Regency Monterey, local and national leaders will pay tribute to Sam's work on behalf of the Central Coast and the nation. That's Sunday, February 12th at the Hyatt Regency Monterey, starting at 6 p.m. For tickets or information, call 373-4607. That's 373-4607. Authorized and paid for by the Friends of Farr Committee.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you interesting topics from the world of food, wine, and fun. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, winemakers, restaurateurs, chefs, farmers, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by the Monterey County Growers and Vintners Association's 4th Annual Passport Weekend, February 17th, 18th, and 19th, travel the world without packing a suitcase.
It's KRXA 540. It's now 546 on this Thursday afternoon, and around the Monterey area, the golf tournament at Pebble Beach is leading to some traffic issues. We get the latest now from Amy Knight.
Yeah, we have problems. South 101 at Spence Road, if you're traveling through Salinas, a big rig and a car have been cleared out of the roadway. That's in the Salinas area, but in Monterey, southbound 1 at 68, an accident still clearing there, and that's causing problems as you make your way in and out of the Monterey area. As you know, it's going to be heavy on the Holman Highway, also 17-mile drive, 68 itself, and Highway 1, as everybody encounters spectators leaving the golf tournament at Pebble Beach. Otherwise, no other problems to report if you're traveling up Highway 1 headed into Santa Cruz. You've got 19 days to get 0% financing on select Chrysler, Jeep, and Dodge vehicles. Image zip 0% on your next Chrysler, Jeep, or Dodge. Qualified buyers use Chrysler Financial. 0% ends soon.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm glad you're listening. I've got a couple of lines open if you'd like to chat with us before the end of this hour. 831-899-5792. Ready, steady, go. 1-888-579-2540. Well, we have talked today about the rehabilitation of Tom DeLay in Republican circles, despite the disgrace of the indictment in Texas, despite the fact that he has serious Abramoff problems and is busy defending the indictment in Texas. The Republicans apparently relented to his demands. That's what I would expect. And Tom DeLay has now been placed on the Appropriations Committee to take Duke Cunningham's chair. As the Dukester, of course, got caught sticking money in his pocket and over $2.4 million in bribes to Cunningham. And so it's ironic, and, of course, the irony is lost on the Republicans that they would put him in that position. But, of course, the hammer is a relentless sort of fellow, and we're going to have to live with that for some time. And I think that it's very interesting when you see further evidence surfacing of the climate that DeLay is responsible for in Washington. The unhealthy relationships between lobbyists, the industries they represent, and the politicians who cash their checks. And as first reported on this program 2 weeks ago, the Gannett News Service today confirmed and provided more details on the way that at the last minute a conference committee report was amended with a $22 billion gift to the health insurance industry. And now we know whose fingerprints are on it. Bill Frist and House Speaker Dennis Hastert. Frist is a medical doctor who loves to tout his background. He's the one, of course, who diagnosed Terry Schiavo right there on the Senate floor using only a videotape. A doctored videotape at that. And so we're now hearing even Republicans speak out, calling it a travesty, the way that Frist and Hastert jammed through this additional item in a bill, the Defense Department Appropriations Bill, last month. And, of course, this was right before the Christmas break. There are all kinds of distractions going on. And this legislation is called the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, and it allows the Secretary of HHS, Health and Human Services, to declare a public health emergency and then provide immunity for the pharmaceutical companies that develop vaccines and other countermeasures. And this is really just another example of the strong-arm backroom tactics used by the Republicans, and they can get away with it because of one-party rule. And if there's any single lesson of the excesses of the Bush era, It is that we can never permit one party to control the White House, both houses of Congress, and the courts at the same time. If that's the only thing we learn from this, we must observe it and learn it. 831-899-5792 or 888-579-2540. Ed in Aptos, you're next. Hello, Ed. How you doing?
Pretty good. I'd like to do a little refuting of your previous caller. I don't know about the passengers that disappeared. I don't know. They had a lot of people that were on airplanes and whatnot. So I think they're pretty sure about those airplanes disappearing.
Well, Ed, let's be very clear about this. Ted Olson's wife, Barbara Olson, was on the flight that allegedly left Dulles, doubled back, and wound up being flown into the Pentagon. She was on her cell phone talking to Ted, and if you don't know who he is, he's a former Solicitor General, and most recently was on the team helping Judge Alito get confirmed to the Supreme Court. And so his wife is gone. He has remarried. I don't know what happened to Barbara Olson or the people who were on that flight, but I do know that the physical evidence at the Pentagon does not match the story of a jetliner being flown into that building. It simply doesn't match. And I cannot prove what happened to Barbara Olson or how that flight may have disappeared. I don't have all the facts. I only have lingering questions that have not been answered.
If you look at a picture, they have some pictures like an F-4 being flown into a brick wall, you know, high-speed photographs. And it's amazing what happens when an airplane hits at high speed. Because an airplane, there's not, you know, they try to make them as light as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, if you crumpled it up, you have a paper airplane, for say, as an example. If you crumpled it up, there wouldn't be much there either. It's hard to believe that, you know, that them being so inept at other things that they could possibly carry this off. That's the only thing that I think that's the main piece of evidence. I don't know. I hope maybe that can give me some solace.
Well, Ed, I respect your view, and as a retired pilot, you certainly know more about jet airplanes than I do.
Yeah, the thing on the airplane, they have what they call a ram air turbine that hangs down. In case the both engines fail, they get their hydraulic power from the engine, so they'd need to have hydraulic power to power the flight control. So that's the backup they have in case they have dual engine failure, which they once did early on in the.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a 767 that went into the towers. At least the United Airlines flight was, but early on in the 767 they had a Canadian Air or Air Canada airplane that, because of the liters gallons mix up, that they didn't give enough fuel, and they basically ran out of gas mid over Canada. And luckily the fellow that was flying it had been in the Canadian Air Force and knew of this airport, Canadian military field had been shut down, and so he basically glided the airplane into the field and, you know, saved the airplane and all the people on board. But that happened early on in the introduction of the 767, which probably would have been around 88, 89, sometime in that frame.
Well, Ed, here's what I'd like to do. I have a copy of the DVD of the documentary Jake referred to called 9/11 in Plain Sight, PLANE.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to send it over to you and ask you to watch it and watch it carefully. Go ahead and use your slow-mo on some of the scenes. And then just give me your honest opinion.
Yeah,
because,
well,
I believe that all of these challenges to 9/11 do not answer the questions. But the questions that are raised are so important and so badly answered by the information that we have been given to date that it leaves many of these questions open in a very glaring way.
Yeah, have you had a chance to read Tom Hartman's latest book on the Kennedy assassination?
No, I haven't.
Well, you know, they found some more information, and but his examination seems quite plausible, and it basically that Teddy, or Teddy, but that Robert was in charge of the cover-up because he didn't want to, he was afraid of starting World War III if they would have, because of Cuban connections and one thing or another, so that, you know damn well that they fudged the autopsy, and they said that, that Bobby was in charge of the autopsy, and there's, you know, just all this stuff that, you know, and other conspiracies, the TWA, I forget the flight number, 801 or whatever it was that went down off of Long Island.
800.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was only one off. But the answers on the you know, their suggestions on that didn't quite match up with what happened. It, you know, somebody could not, with very minor explosive, could have, you know, set above the fuel tank. In fact, there was one flying between Manila and Tokyo, I think, that they had an explosive go off on it. And the guy was two rows back of the fuel tank. Well, if he would have been two rows forward where he wasn't on the airplane. He just put the bomb on the airplane and then left, and then it didn't get, you know, wasn't inspected good enough. It was hidden up underneath the seat.
Ed, I want to squeeze in one more caller, but
okay,
I don't want to cut
anyhow,
you off.
That preceded that by a little ways, but if he would have been a better, you know, knew a little bit more about airplanes, he would have brought that airplane down, and we would have never known about those things. So,
mm-hmm. All right.
There's a lot of questions that haven't been answered.
Absolutely, and I'll get that DVD to you. Thanks for checking in today. Scott in Humboldt, you get the final word. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'd like to thank you for constantly bringing up September 11th and the unanswered questions. I'd like to just highlight that there was a series of war games that were going on in the early weeks of September. They were organized and coordinated by Dick Cheney. This is according to research that Michael Rupert has come up with in Crossing the Rubicon,
yes,
which has something like 600 footnotes. Anyway, every major intelligence agency, foreign intelligence agency, was warning this country that something large and unexpected or large and catastrophic was going to happen on the east coast of the United States, play a war game that the Russians were coming over. And another war game had live hijackings and inserts onto FAA screens. So while the country was supposed to be getting all these alerts that something was going to happen, he continued with these war games that left the East Coast undefended, and that's not ever really talked about much.
Scott, I'm out of time, okay, but I appreciate your call, and I don't dispute anything you just said. Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Happy trails!
Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436, 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Dave Barrett.
It's a clear arrow pointing to the vice president.
CBS News political correspondent Gloria Borger on the website claimed by the National Journal, one that says former vice presidential chief of staff Louis Libby told a federal grand jury that he was encouraged by higher-ups to leak secret info.
Today's National Journal says that Vice President Cheney is one of those superiors who encouraged him to share classified information as part of a strategy to build a defense for the war. While the vice president has been interviewed by the special prosecutor, no one knows his testimony. The vice president's office declined any comment today.
The president said not long after the attacks of September 11th, al-Qaeda had planned to fly a plane into the tallest building in Los Angeles, the Library Tower. It's now known as the U.S. Bank Tower. Here's correspondent Jim Stewart.
How serious was Osama bin Laden about a second strike? Officials confirmed the terrorist chief had personally set aside $50,000 of his dwindling fortune to bankroll it. And one of the four men recruited to carry it out was already a professionally trained pilot, which theoretically put the plot on a fast track. All the 9/11 pilots had to be trained from scratch.
President Bush says anti-terror action stopped the plot before it could be carried out in 2002. This time she was seen on Kuwaiti TV.
February 2nd, 2006.
Jill Carroll, the 28-year-old journalist held captive in Iraq, She said she had written to authorities asking that action be taken soon. The time is short. In earlier messages, Carol had said her captors wanted all women in U.S. and in Iraqi custody released. A deputy justice minister in Iraq says next week 450 male detainees are to be set free, but there's no indication that four or five women held in custody will be among those released. Anti-terror laws balanced against civil liberties. Some compromises have been made to keep provisions of the Patriot Act in effect. Nebraska Republican Senator Chuck Hagel.
I think we have reached an accommodation in this bill that makes it relevant, makes it realistic, makes it workable, and protects both our rights and our national security interests.
The current extension of the Patriot Act expires in early March. 1.5 million girls ages 12 to 17 began drinking alcohol back in 2004. Government doctors say